in an alcoholic.
So he was talking about an anniversary. That would be now 7 years without a drink or a drug, because I'm a drug addict as well. And I've been in recovery probably about three different times, and never got past a couple months until this time that I got in. Let me see here. It's a good day today, you know. My days are always better, and you know, just like Sandy said, this gives me an opportunity to get to a meeting that doesn't fit my schedule quite. So I'm actually here. I'm actually here because I was asked. So that's always a good thing, you know. It's a good thing to try to give back, and it's I always find that it helps. It helps to share, because I always learn something. I always walk out of here after sharing, and I've learned something again, you know, even if I don't. You know, I learn when I go to a meeting, and I learn the other way as well. And I thought about something today, and it's a good opportunity for me to practice letting go, because what I try to do is not prepare anything to say. And so I knew I was going to share a couple days ago, so I had a couple days to just practice. Let it go. Don't think about it. And what I'm basically doing is I'm basically trusting that what's going to happen is going to happen, and it's going to come from... It's going to come from inside of me instead of out of my head, you know, which is part of the way I live today, you know. I try to let go and let my higher power. So let me see. I'm 50 now. I did the usual, the average for an alcoholic. They say about a good 30 years of drinking usually brings us to the rooms, you know, and that was exactly it. 30 years of drinking and drugging. Nothing special about my childhood. I was suburbia, three sisters, alcoholic father. Didn't realize that until later on in life. In fact, until by the time I got into recovery, I still didn't know he was an alcoholic, you know, because I was very introverted and he was hiding and all this stuff. My mother had depression, and she was very sick, so she spent a lot of time in the hospital and in her room. And I loved her very much, and I never noticed any. I never really. I mean, I was definitely affected by the things in my childhood. But the only thing I remembered was that my father was pretty mean, you know, and I resented him for that. But I loved my mother dearly. So nothing special went on there, except I thought. I basically thought that I was unique because I was extremely shy, and. When I started going to school, that's where the nightmarish part of my life started, because I had to interact with other people. And it was awful, you know, it was just awful. And I remember vaguely, it was like about the third year my father brought me to school for the first day of school, and I was still crying. And the first year I went to grade one, everybody, you know, there were some kids crying. The second year, there was a couple crying. And the third year, I remember, I was the only one crying. You know, and it's like, ooh. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And it was just, you know, being shy, and I'm not good enough. And my God, I'm going to, you know, things like recess and lunchtime were just awful, because that meant I'm going to have to socialize with people. And that followed me. That followed me right through up until my first drink. And when I hit high school, you know, I started drinking a little bit, and when I hit high school, I was 14, I basically either got drunk and stoned every day, until I came into recovery for the first time. It was just something I did, you know. You know, it was normal to start the day in school with a joint and then proceed into chemicals and get drunk, and it was just the normal thing for me to do. And so that's what I did. So during that period of, you know, we're looking at high school, during that 10 years there, what I did was had a wonderful, great time, and I rocketed, and, you know, flew around, had a wonderful time, and I lost my shyness, my inhibitions, and became very popular. I was one of the school pushers, so I had a lot of friends around me. I always had drugs, so it was, you know, everything had changed, you know, and I had a lot of fun. Didn't notice all the things that were going. I was losing, you know. I stopped doing sports. I was At 14, I was the best high jumper in Quebec for my age group, and I just left. I just pretty well left that. Stop studying, you know. Stop learning how to grow. Stop knowing how to deal with life, because everything, how I dealt with everything was just to be, you know, as high as I could get, you know. So I lost a lot of stuff, and I didn't recognize it, you know. I stopped interacting with my family, and I was just having a really, really great time. And then what happened was it got really messed up, and I owed pushers money, and they were coming to beat me up, and you know, my father's trying to get me into rehab, and I don't want to go into rehab, and next thing you know, I was going to get beat up or go to rehab, and I said, you know what, I'll go to rehab. I don't want to get beat up. And so I went to my first rehab, and it was a really beautiful experience, because it was based on AA, and it was a live-in program. And I remember very clearly that there was a lot of unconditional love, and I remember that really beautiful feeling of that unconditional love. But I didn't want to get sober, and I didn't want to stop taking drugs, and I kept running away. And finally, I think out of the fourth time, they just let me go, because they realized, you know, he's not gonna do anything. So I continued, and then if you can, you know, it seems the obvious thing that happened was no education. Stoned every day, my life just fell apart, you know, just fell apart. I can't keep a job, I can't do anything. My focal point is to get high, and I hadn't particularly chosen a drug yet of choice. It was like anything or everything. And I got really, I started getting really messed up in like needles. It's like, okay, no, that's really, really bad. So we'll try this and try that and all these different things. And then for a long period of time, what I did was I would do anything I could to find the money to get high. That was now the focal point of my life. And I'm in my 20s, you know. And I managed to get some jobs, and I managed to somehow, at one point, I guess I'm looking around 25, become employed and remained employed for the rest of my days up to today. Different jobs, and one that worked out really well was bartender, because bartenders could be drunk and stoned, make piles of money, everything's wonderful, you know. And where I worked, I was encouraged to be drunk and stoned, so I could do the whole thing and continue my lifestyle. I missed a great part of my life, you know. I missed the 80s are very, very vague. Very, very vague. And there's 10 years, you know, that's very vague stuff. I lost the buzz. I lost that great feeling, because that great feeling I had was in the first 10 years. That great feeling went away. Now what I was trying to do was trying to stay off of special drugs like cocaine, try to stay away from them, because if I started them, that means I would take cocaine for a day and a half until everything was gone, and then feel bad. And then, so it's like, try to stay away from that. Try to just get drunk and smoke dope every day. And I tried to not get too drunk, and I tried not to get too drunk for a long time. And I would do these things, and basically what I would do was I would if I was at home, I would measure my cans, my big cans of beer, and it's like, only this much, Larry, because this means you'll get drunk, you won't get the hangover, you won't throw up that evening, and you won't spin. And I never could do it. I would always do something like run to Dépanneur, because it was 5 to 11, and it's like, are you nuts, Larry? Are you fucking nuts? You know, the Dépanneur is going to be closed, and you're not going to be drinking anymore. And so that went on and on and on. And I think, you know, I think what is so different today, which, you know, than those days, is that Today, I don't think about using drugs or drinking. It happens every once in a while. A thought comes in my mind. I'm happy today. You know, my life has come together. In 7 years since I've got in here, I started working on cleaning up my life in every aspect, through school, through, you know, learning how to drive, learning how to use a computer, learning how to speak French, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, and yeah, changed my job and so on and so forth. But what stuck out from those 30 years that I used and drank was that I spent a great deal of it trying to stop, and I couldn't, and I felt bad. And it just went on. So it's like, how can I calculate that? Not to just drag on about that same thing, you know. It was a really sad existence. It wasn't noticeably sad back then, because I didn't want to come here. I didn't want to stop drinking, and I knew AA because I tried a couple times, and I dreaded having to come back into these rooms and the stupid slogans and going to AA meetings and so on and so forth. You know, it was like taking another piece of my life out. You know, is that what? That's how I felt about recovery. Today, when I look back at my life as a drug addict and alcoholic, it's like it's so sad. It's such a sad life, you know. If I think about it long enough, I'm going to cry, you know. Like how low I went and what I would do and how much I lost and how lonely and frightened and awful I felt for so long. But I didn't feel that back then. I didn't feel that when I came into these rooms either, you know. I mean, I at the end, I sat there and I had my big can of beer on the ground with another one, because I didn't want to have to go back to the fridge. So I'm drinking warm beer, even though it wasn't that warm because I was drinking pretty fast. Just because I didn't want to have to go back to the fridge. And I would sit there with a cigarette. And so now, I remember feeling paralyzed because I had to have a chain smoke and drink. And I'd get these crazy ideas. I'd sit on the backyard and say, you know, I'm going to change everything around. And it's like, sometimes I would. Or sometimes I'd change everything in the house around. And it's like, I couldn't do it anymore because I couldn't put down the beer and a cigarette. And I remember feeling, wow, like I'm chained here. I can't move, you know. And right at the end, before I came in this time, I wanted to die. I wanted to kill myself. And I started thinking about it as an option. And it wasn't as if I was going to do it, but the thought that I wanted to die was so much not Larry that it stuck a bell off in my head, you know. And I had tried many, many, well, at least the last, I would say at least the last 15 years of my drinking and drugging, I was always trying to stop. I tried Adabooze, which is for people don't know, it's a pill you take, and it's, if you drink with it, you get violently sick. So what I do is I take my Adabooze, and then I would drink, and then I would get violently sick, and I said, you're going to kill yourself, stop the Adabooze, you know, because, like, there's no way you can stop drinking. But I couldn't stop drinking, so it was like, you know, I didn't know how, you know. So so I came in here, and I'm going to lose another part of my life here, you know, in my head. And it's like, oh, geez, okay. Now what I'm going to try to do is, my life became so messy that being faithful in a relationship was out the window. It was like, if I was drunk and stoned, you end up somewhere else. And so it's like, I'm in this relationship. So I'm going to try to get a handle on my drinking, to get a handle on my cocaine use, to get a handle on my sex life so I can keep my relationship. That's how I walked in here, okay? And even though I tried to stop drinking for so long, it was an amaze. I was amazed to find out that I was an alcoholic after 5 days. I sat in a meeting, and it was like, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic, you know? Even though I tried to stop drinking for 15 years, you know, and I couldn't, you know, every day. That's amazing, amazingly powerful denial, you know. And something switched. When I realized that, it meant to me in my head. And I'm so glad that this was given to me, because I don't feel like I deserve it. But it was like a gift was given to me of clarity. Now I'm going to cry. You know, gratitude. That I understood there that if I continued drinking, the pain and the agony that I felt for the last 15 years easily was going to get worse. And it was just going to get worse. And all of a sudden, alcohol was no longer a source of happiness and comfort and a source of oblivion. It was a source of more pain and more agony. And I understood that. And I drank my whole friggin' life to try to be happy. So it was like, I'm not going through that door anymore. And I got that clarity. And for the first three months of my recovery was living hell, because it was stated tonight, you know, we walk in here spiritually bankrupt, our life is a mess, everything's a mess, you know. You don't know how to live. So me, I was so raw, my emotions were so raw. And it was living hell, and I was bombarded with thoughts of using and drinking and using and drinking, and I just could get that clarity that if I stayed sober, two things. I would stop the pain and the destruction. But not only that, when I walked in AA, I learned something very quickly, that if I work this program, I can become happy like the happy people in this program. That was important to me, because it wasn't mean, because I wasn't just going to stop drinking. I was actually going to become happy, because I wasn't happy before I started. I wasn't happy during all that time that I drank. And I certainly wasn't happy when I walked in here. I mean, I felt absolutely horrible. So I honestly believed that if I did what I was told to do, I would become happy. And I would be freed from the destruction and the pain. And so I started doing my program. I started going to meetings every day. Well, first of all, it wasn't that easy. First of all, I didn't want to be here. So I'm doing my thing, and people are saying, you know, you should go to a little more meetings than that. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And it's like, I'm only two. I'm not into the isms. I'm not into this. I'm not into the God. I just want to get the alcohol thing cleared up. And it's like, no, Larry, you know, you should try six. Six and six. And then what happened was, I came to AA because you guys don't talk about drugs, you know. So I'd always had a joint in my pocket, you know. So as soon as the meeting was over, I'd be high. Because, you know, it wasn't clear that I had to stop everything, you know. And when I hit 2 months into this program, so I went to my meetings. And then I started going to lunch meetings. Because if I go to a night meeting, that means I have to wait till 8:30, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock to smoke a joint, because I want to make you guys happy. I don't even know how to make myself happy yet, you know. So what happened was, here again, 2 months later. Oh, first of all, let me say this. At a month, somebody said, I can't sleep, you know. And somebody said, well, make sure you don't take any sleeping pills. And it's like, oh, geez, sleeping pills. Like, oh, boy. You know, I take Rivotril and Ativan and take those every day, you know. It's like, Christ, that's part of my addiction? Like, Jesus, you guys, you know. So what I did was I stopped taking Ativan and Rivotril every night. And I had been doing that for years, and that never even dawned on me that that stuff is addictive. And God, is it addictive, you know. And that would be any, you know, an issue. So it's like I just stopped. Now I'm racing crazy out of my head with emotions. And I quit it, and I stopped, and I was so messed up that I didn't even know I was going through withdrawal. You know, like, I mean, there was days that I would sit in a chair and I just felt like I was falling because I was so exhausted because I hadn't slept, but I kept going to my meetings. And then I'm sitting there and some guy's sharing, and they started talking. This is at 2 months into the program. Somebody says they were looking for God in dope. And I start falling. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to stop smoking dope. Okay, so now the alcohol's gone, the cocaine's gone, my sleeping pills are gone, the marijuana's got to go. And that day, when I got out of there, I panicked and I freaked and I started running to meeting, to meeting, to meeting. asking people, would you be my sponsor? I need help, because there's no friggin' way that I'm going to be able to do this without help. Okay? And I asked a couple people, and then I walked in and I saw this guy, and he looked like this angel. You know, he had this beautiful blue eyes with a smile on his face and all these people around him, and he just looked right at me. And he just had so much peace and joy in his eyes. And he just finished sharing, and I wanted to thank him, and I wanted to get his phone number, and I wanted to ask him to be a sponsor. And I said, can I get your phone number? He said, sure. And then the next day I called him up, and I said, can you be my sponsor? And he said, well, there's no such thing as a sponsor, Larry. It's not in the book. But you can certainly call me every day, rest of your life, if you want to. So he became my sponsor. Now, there's no more drugs, alcohol, everything's gone, too much into this program. I understood that at that point, you know. And I started feeling better. And I was just like, people were helping me. You know, you ask a question, people help you. It's like, well, I feel horrible. It's like, well, you're supposed to feel horrible, Larry. It's like, well, I'm thinking about drugs and alcohol. It's like, Larry, it's okay. As long as you don't keep putting fire on the fire, it's going to go out. That flame is going to flicker out. And it's true. It went less and less. And then I said, listen, I can't do this. I can't do the God thing. And he said, listen, just. I said, don't worry about it, okay? Don't worry about it. Just do, you know, go to your meetings, do what you got to do. And somebody told me this thing, and I found this utterly amazing, because this is where I connected with turning my will and my life over to God. Was somebody said that if you do your third step prayer for 30 days, you'll have a spiritual awakening. If you do it every day for 30, and it's like, okay, so here I am. I took it right out of the book, page 86, and I remember that. That's the only page I can actually remember, because I did this every day, and I read the whole thing, and it was what you're supposed to do in the morning, what you're supposed to do at night, you know? You turn your whole will and your life over. You let go of your self-pity and your resentments and your fear and your worry and your resentments and your remorse of the your past and so on and so forth. It's all there, you know? And you let go of all these sections of your ego and turn it over, you know? So I did that every day, and I'm always racing, and I'm always in pain and agony, you know? And I got a moment of peace, a moment of peace. And we're looking at about 27 days into my 30, and I'm counting them, and I'm waiting for this spiritual awakening. And I did this on my knees, and I thought this is just so wonderful, because I'm not doing the God thing, but I'm on my knees praying every day. Yeah, it's a smart little cookie here, you know. And I'm lying there, and I'm lying on my bed, and I felt peace. And it's just stopped the self-pity, the self-seeking. You know? And I just felt peace for about a minute. And I said, my God, I can live like this. This is what I can live. This is what I'm going to get. This is it. This is the spiritual awakening for me, is that I can feel peace. And some joy, eh? Some peace and joy by detaching myself away. And it's pretty much how the program works, a great part of it, you know. So I continue to do that. And I've been doing that every day up to today, actually. I do that prayer every day. I no longer do every section of it, but when I see there's a special thing that I'm focusing on more than something other, you know, like I'm hanging on to a resentment, or I'm hanging on to self-pity, or I'm hanging on to something a little more than usual, I specify, I go through, Lord, I pray for release of bondage of my ego, and then I name some of my ego that I want to really detach myself from, you know. And so that's the thing I do every day today as part of my program. And just to say, because, you know, it's important, because I always thought, well, I'm a loser, I'm not a loser, I'm getting better. It's like, listen, I don't want to brag, because I got peace and joy in my life, and I don't want you guys to get the wrong impression either. I have every default there is. They're just not as amplified as they used to be. I have more peace today than I've ever had in my life, you know. But I don't have peace. Like, it's not like a lot of peace, but it's more than ever. I have more joy. More gratitude, I trust more. I can let go more. I can honestly say, listen, you know, like my, you know, like things are, if this new thing doesn't work, you know, you should start worrying. It's like, you know what? No, I can actually trust more today than ever. And everything in my life is better. Something amazing happened to me, I guess, 3 years ago, was I stopped feeling alone. I no longer felt detached from my higher power. I felt that when I get up in the morning, my goal is to do the next best thing. And when something comes into my life, I do what I'm supposed to do, which is be a kind, gentle human being, relax and let go of my ego and stop trying to control it all. And I feel that today. And like I said, it's like every other thing I feel today, it's only I feel it more. But 3 years ago, up to that 3 years, I never felt that before. I always had Lawrence, my sponsor, telling me, but you're not alone, Larry. You're not alone. It's like, I sort of look alone. I feel alone. I don't see anybody around here, you know, and felt alone. So that was an amazing thing that grows every day. My sponsor is a meditator. I've meditated now for 6.5 years. It's probably, you know, the most important thing I did was stop drinking, walk into these rooms, join AA, and start meditating. These are the primary, you know, the primary things of my whole life that gives me everything that I have. I remember in the first couple of years, I said, Lawrence, I think I'll start meditating 25 minutes a day instead of 25 minutes twice a day. And he just said, well, you know, Larry, he says, you're the only one that's going to notice any difference. You're the only one that's not going to be as happy. And right away, I started meditating twice a day, and I never doubted it again. I never decided, no, you know what? Because if I don't work my program, even though I stop drinking, I'm going to be as miserable as I was before I walked in here. I can get there really fast, really, really fast. So working my program is not an option if I want to have happiness in my life, you know. I have a friend right now that's having a nervous breakdown. He's 21 years sober. He can't even go to work right now, you know. Doesn't work his program. Hasn't had a drink, though. And these are good examples of what would I turn into if I didn't practice letting go and trusting God and working my program, you know. So for me, the meditation has been the biggest tool for me within this whole program, because what I do is I sit there and I stop thinking and I just say Maranatha, and I give myself over and I just practice that. And by doing that, you know, you look at it, like I guess I do it every 10 hours, you know, for, you know, 6.5 years, it gets in there, you know. You start really being able to trust, to let go, to relax, to detach, you know. And with that, I have a really, really nice life today, you know. And not only that, but all those other, you know, those material things and those educational things and all those other things are in a better place than they've ever been before. So my life is no longer a mess. I learned to love myself. I take good care of myself. I stop drinking. I eat properly. I exercise. I make sure I have friends. I make sure I have all different things in my life. The strangest thing, the thing that was the biggest nightmare of my life, was to interact with human beings. Today, the most beautiful thing in my life today is to interact with other human beings. Go figure. You know, it's just so beautiful. You know, I appreciate life, and I'm extremely grateful to AA. I'm going to close up here. I'm extremely grateful to AA, but my, you know, and I heard it before, but it's so true, is that everything I have today is because of you people. I couldn't possibly do this by myself. And Even just because I have 7 years, I still cannot do it without you people. So I have to be part of AA for the rest of my life. I have to continually detach myself from my ego. Because when I look at myself, a simple definition of what I have is an obsession with myself. I can't stop thinking about myself. I'm totally self-centered. And I obsess and obsess and obsess. So if I pick up a drink, I'm gone. That's obvious. Oh yeah, I forgot to say I did it once. I went into, that's what happened to me. I went into recovery for 6 months. I put myself in a 6-month program. I did everything I had to do, put everything aside to get into this program. Came out of there feeling wonderful. Got the program. Everything was great. And I said, why can't I smoke a friggin' joint? I went up to smoke one joint, and I went out and I used cocaine and got drunk every day for 15 more years. And when I came back in here, I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember anything about this program, how it worked or anything, except I hated the fucking slogans and I didn't want to come back here for anything. Mm-hmm. You know? One joint. And I never got the joint, by the way, because as soon as I thought I was going to get high, I ran to the cocaine dealer and I was gone. So that's given me, you know, and it's too bad for me, but I mean, I'm still grateful. I'm 50 and I'm clean today. But that took another 15 years of my life because I had the thought, why can't I? What was it? The conclusion was, Larry's the addict. It's not the pot that's got the problem. It's not the bottle of beer that's got the problem. It's Larry's that got the problem. Larry's always going to have the problem. And if it wasn't for you people, I honest to God believe I'd be dead. And I thank you very much.
Larry, thanks for a wonderful talk. It's been a while since I've heard you, and I've heard things that I don't ever remember.